Hello and welcome back to the Sports Central Podcast. This is episode number 77 and it's the best episode and the best number because we share a podcast number with Luka Doncic's jersey, who did not win MVP in the NBA All-Star Week. But yeah, we are the Sports Podcast. I'm back, we're ready, and I'm joined by Snare and Prophecy. How are you
lads
doing?
Are we the Sports Podcast or the Esports Podcast, Camille?
Oh, you know what? I forgot the small E next to the capital S in my in my announcement there. I'm very sorry, Prof.
You should be. It's utterly unacceptable, and I'll expect a public apology and a letter of resignation on my desk by Monday morning.
Oh, my God.
It's happening. It's happening. Listen, I'm just a bit confused, right? Because esports and sports is basically the same thing now, right? If you think about the fucking Premier League, I mean, games are not decided on what's happening on the pitch, right? It's happening on the screen when the VAR comes up, right? So that's esports too now, isn't it, Prof?
Well, I mean, the thing with esports is that at least you look at a screen before making a decision. VAR, it just seems like they have the screen on the field and then they just somehow assume that the refs don't know what how to look at a screen. So they're like, no, you don't need to look. We'll decide randomly with a coin toss and back play. And you know that giant Jumbotron that we've got up in every single stadium almost in Britain? Yeah, we're not going to use that because the fans don't need to see what's going on. They just need to know that there's a VAR decision ongoing,
yep,
regardless of what that decision actually is.
VAR reminds me of like lag in Counter-Strike, and that's basically how games are decided now.
Listen, it can't be with a coin toss, Prophecy, because then 50% of the time the decisions will have to be good. Right?
No. 50. It just means that 50% of the time it is there has to be heads or tails. It doesn't. I mean, half those decisions could require a heads and end up being tails. So there's a solid chance of being wrong 75% of the time at least.
Ooh, all right. Now that's math right there. That's why we call it Prophecy. But I think some VAR decisions was only the second worst thing to happen this weekend in the quote-unquote esport world. In the NBA All-Star game or weekend, Aaron Gordon got fucking robbed in the slam dunk contest. Whoever has
what?
Seen that,
what are you talking
he
about,
was
man?
Robbed.
What are you talking about? Let's hear this argument. Let's hear.
Okay, listen. Everybody thinks about the tallest man in the world, even though he wasn't the tallest man in the world, just tallest man in the NBA. It's Yao Ming. Man's was 7'5", right? You think about him and you think about the Burj Khalifa in Dubai. That's how big Yao Ming was, right? Now we have a guy in the NBA named Taco Fall who's just as tall as him. And he's standing there and Aaron Gordon is jumping over him and slamming that shit down, dude. If that's not a 50 full score snare, then I don't know what is.
Bro, but remember, who was it last year that dunked over Shaq? We've been seeing this last few years, like jumping over super tall niggas ain't the thing anymore. It's not like the most hype, incredible, guaranteed 50. No, it's just like, aye, guy, we get it, you can do this thing, right? It's like, maybe five years ago, I would agree, yes, give this man a 50, right? But the kind of things we've been seeing these last couple of years, it's like, nah, guys, come on, it has to be a little bit more special than that, fam.
Okay, but did you... Okay, he had another dunk too. I agree. We're in agreement on principle of the Matthias Snare, but the one where he gets past the ball mid-air, catches the ball
dope,
with one hand, and windmills that.
That shit was dope.
Nuts. But the real travesty of All-Star Weekend is not actually the dunk contest. Is that the three-point shooting contest wasn't talked about more. That was tooth and nail. Literally, our man won that shit, and the last... Like
last
second,
ball,
he flipping shot clocked the thing in the All-Star game competition. It was insane. Who won it? Devin Booker came second. Wait, did Devin Booker win it? No.
You can see how clearly Camille's gotten angry. He doesn't even remember who actually won it. He just remembers that the guy that he wanted to win didn't.
He's just like,
I mean, I'm a
happening?
Devin Booker fan, but he came second, I'm pretty sure. I'm just Googling this. How did I forget the guy's name?
I'll be honest and say I didn't watch the three-point contest. I haven't watched three-point contest in a few years. I'm All-Star Weekend, I'm here for dunks, bro. Me, I know exactly what it is. I'm here for highlight reels. I'm here to see I'm here to see some homie with a Superman shirt. He's just doing wild things. That's what I live for every year.
Oh, Buddy Hield won it. Okay, all right. No wonder I forgot his name. All right. Okay, so I didn't remember the winner's name, so I kind of confirmed my own theory that the three-point contest wasn't spoke about enough because I didn't even remember the winner's name. So I suck, but you know, if it wasn't on VAR, did it even happen, Prof?
Even if it did happen on VAR, it didn't happen, so...
Even if it did happen on VAR, the refs wouldn't have seen it anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So memes aside, we actually are esports podcast. I feel like I have to point that out every week. And this time, we're actually going heavy into the esports. Not even like meta content where we talk about the business aspects, sponsorships. We're talking about the fucking game here for the first time in what? Probably this year on this podcast. And I'm ready for it. So ready, in fact. I'm passing over hosting duties over to Prophecy, and host is just his term for the night. He's actually the fucking referee, because tonight we're doing top 5 players who have never won a TI, and myself and Snare are ready for the fucking bloodbath. If you think Snare's political opinions are bad, you haven't even heard his Dota opinions yet. Prof, are you ready for this shit?
Well, I'm ready to award the contest to Snare before we even start. So yeah,
we're ready. I'm down. Yeah, let's go.
You know what? I'm gonna give some spoilers. Yeah, before this podcast started, I was like, okay, we can do a point system. You know, who's gonna make better arguments? And Prof was like, yeah, I'm gonna give it to the guy I like more. So I might as well retire from this comp now, man.
I mean, don't blame me.
We are South Africans, so it is quite common to just give it to the person that you like more, isn't it?
Yeah. And South African esports, if we don't use nepotism, are we even esports?
I mean, unlike you, Camille, it seems like I'm paying my bribes on time, bro. So.
What a player.
Before we start, though, hold on. I actually wanted to ask Prof, what do you think of the new Sin 5 as it stands right now?
Which new Sin 5?
CSGO. Like the new lineup.
I mean, the retirement home.
Yep, the retirement home.
I mean, I think that team is average.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's a lot of storied players on there, but they were storied for what they've done in the past. They haven't really set the world alight individually for quite a while. I mean, Elise was pretty good when he was playing on Bravado in America, but outside of those two, it's just difficult to see where the fragging power is going to come from from that team outside of Elusive.
Feels like this team is just a new, like, 2020 version of the old DC. They're like, all right, I haven't had a strong gatekeeper in a while, so somebody else needs to be out here to carry that torch.
Possibly. Anyway, let's get to our contest. So I think let's do something different here. So let's lay out the 5 that you've picked from the beginning. So Camille, who are your 5, and then we'll argue them piece by piece.
Okay, so at number 5, we already split, right? Because we both have Burning on the list, but I have him 5, and I feel like our reasoning for where we have these guys are going to be very different. I mean, Prof, can I just take it away and explain why I got my number 5 the way it is?
Yeah, so Camille, explain to me why you think Burning deserves to be number 5 on your list.
Okay, so the two players I've chosen for number 5 are for good reason, right? They're two very similar players in the form of Burning and Arteezy. Both of these players at certain points in their Dota 2 history have been the absolute best in the world at what they do in the safe lane hard carry. Arteezy, during that TI4 year, I feel like was way ahead of the competition in his individual skill as a carry. But of course, come TI, he fell a little short, finished third there. Burning finished fourth, fourth placing, if I'm not mistaken. Similar story.
To be fair, Arteezy didn't play mid, didn't play safe lane carry at the time.
Yeah. He was a mid laner, but he basically paid
part. No, he was the hard carry.
Good clarification there, Prof. It's many years ago, you know? And then Burning, obviously Snare will agree with me. In the early days of Dota, this guy was the epitome of what a carry supposed to be. 4 Protect 1 was literally 4 Protect Burning. That's how that shit started. That's how good he was. But both these players through coming to TI have fallen short multiple times. I think Arteezy, being one of the more consistent players over the years in TI, has been a serial choker. And Burning, I have to say the same thing for him, because the fact that these guys have been playing for the amount of years they have been and haven't won a TI is pretty insane. I think Arteezy still has a bit more time with Burning retiring, but I feel like maybe in 2 or 3 years Arteezy will actually catch up with Burning, because if I had to put a 6th year, Arteezy would be 6 and Burning would be 5. Also with Burning, he had periods in time when he was a player where I feel like he was so far behind the meta, actually. Like, just because he was Burning, he was playing on teams, but he wasn't the best player in the team. Obviously, he had other moments where he came back. I think Burning's comeback when he won the Dota 2 Asia Championship with IG, and he sort of reinvented himself as a carry player. It was really impressive. But for me, both these guys, serial chokers at TI, but their legacy outside of TI has been so great that they make the list of top five players to never win.
All right. Okay. And Snail, I mean, what do you have to say about that? Because you've obviously got Burning on your list. So yeah. Firstly, why do you think Burning deserves to be higher on the list than five? And why do you think Arteezy does not deserve to be on the list?
So the main reason for me why I don't think the A-God belongs on that list, I agree that the A-God has been one of the better players. Like when he's hot, he's one of the best players on the planet, right? But the issue is that whenever it gets to TI, it's been his first TI, the TI4, was the only time I've seen Arteezy on a team at TI where he was anything close to being the reason why they were winning games. And it's like, all right, okay, cool. Arteezy's out here making the most happen. It is what it is. TI 5, he played with, that was the secret year, right?
First secret year.
That was the first secret year, which was garbage. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, that's not really his fault necessarily, and the reason why it was garbage. TI 6, I think they placed, where did they come? Because he went back to EG after that, right?
One of them placed last in main event. I can't remember if that was 6 or 7, though.
No, that was 6, yeah. Because 5, they played, I think 7th, 8th with Secret. And then the next one, because they did like the double shuffle back and forth.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, where they both Secret and EG had to play open quals. And then they ended up, they got knocked out
but,
last.
I mean, this isn't explaining exactly why Arteezy deserves not to be on, or doesn't deserve to be on the list.
So the reason why I think, right, is that whenever I see Arteezy play at TI in particular, right, because that's the discussion tournament that we have on our list here, it always feels like he's holding the team back in some respect, outside of that first TI, I'll admit. Even this last year, TI 8, I believe, where they came third, that felt to me like it was heavily, heavily a strategic win. Both S4, Bulba, and Fly were putting in mad amounts of work there, outdrafting people left, right, and center, setting up lanes in really interesting ways, making the game so much easier for Arteezy to play. But whenever it was a genuinely difficult situation, where it's like, yo, if the A-God doesn't have an incredible performance, we are going to lose this, didn't really feel like Arteezy... Like, I mean, he still won games, don't get me wrong, right? But it wasn't because of how good he was, necessarily. It wasn't like that TI... on that Liquid one, man.
Yeah, I actually agree with you.
Yeah.
Even in recent years, Arteezy has never been the star anymore either. I mean, previous EG iterations, it's been Sumail being the number one carry. Now we have Abed and Ramses there in the team, and Arteezy just he's not the LeBron James of his team anymore.
Yeah, he just does what he has to do, right? Whereas so with someone like Burning, there were times where like TI3, DK. As good as the team was overall, I mean, it does have players that I have on this list, Lanem, MMY, they're doing DK later. But like, whenever Burning is hot at TI, right, it would honestly feel like, okay, the reason your teams aren't winning TI is because your team is letting you down. You are out here doing the most, putting the team on your back, saying, guys, let's go try and win this fucking thing. And then somebody else is feeding, but it's not really on you. Like, you're really going out of your way to do something special, even in a situation like Camille's right, that sometimes Burning would be behind the meta and wouldn't actually be playing at the same strategic level as everybody else would be, like around the world. But simultaneously, it's still like, yo, this guy's playing heroes that are not good in the meta right now and still posting up incredible numbers better than anybody in the tournament. I think there's only been like 3 TIs where at the end of the day that Burning was at, where it ended up that he was statistically matched up badly and poorly versus other carries. I think it was TI4 where Hao won, and then TI5, I think he fell behind Raven in that year. But generally, it feels like Burning, I don't know, like 5th? Nah, Burning deserves to be a bit higher than that, just because of how often it's felt like he's been robbed. Where it's like, yo, guys, give this guy one more game, man, and something interesting or different could have happened. It just so happened that the team itself fell apart at the last moment, but it wasn't because of him. He was still playing solid and clean, and I sort of disagree with the assertion that, like, he was the one that's individually choking at TIs. I've seen Burning choke a lot at other tournaments, but I feel like I haven't seen a game at TI where it's like, yo, the reason y'all lost and the reason y'all got knocked out is because Burning messed up in some particular way. It's kind of like how, you know, at TI7, when SCCC put the team on his back, gets newbie to the finals, and when they lose, it's like, it's not on you, dog. You're actually doing everything you're supposed to do. Your team's collapsing, they're choking, they're doing their thing. And it feels like, especially at TI, Burning's always that guy where his team falls apart, he's still great. And Arteezy feels like he's being carried when it gets to TI itself.
On the point of comparison to Burning and Arteezy, I will agree with you there. But I also don't think that I go into TI for multiple of years and say, okay, I look at Burning and I'm like, this is the top carry there. Not even from the Chinese region do I say Burning is the top carry there. There's been Hao for multiple years being much better than Burning, in my opinion. There was years where Sila really popped off where TI started carrying. I think when I get to my number four, when Ice played carry for EOM, I also looked like a seriously good carry player. And I look at teams getting compromised, comprised for TI, and I look at the safe lane position, I'm not going to be picking Burning as my number one choice for many a year now. That's why I have Burning at number five.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, Snare, you were saying there that you got Lan-M and MMY, but yeah. MMY was more of the edge case. So why does Lan-M deserve to be more in consideration than MMY here?
For me, because I think with MMY is one of those players that, like, when he was hot, especially in the earlier TIs, it looked really incredible, like the first four, like the things he was able to pull off. But then it felt like MMY is one of those players where if he's in a team that allows him to play his style of Dota, he's going to be one of the best players in the world. But it's not always the case. Even at TI, there's always going to be on a team that allows him to express himself in that way. But Lan-M, many different teams, many different iterations. He has the, like, more interesting way of understanding the game. Lan-M has set many, 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 many a meta. Like, I'm glad you brought up Ehom, Camille. In that TI, I think it was TI6, right? Yeah, that's the one that wins one. That particular TI, like, the tournament started, and everyone's just like, what was the meta at that time? It was after the Gyrocopter metas.
I can't tell you the meta because Wings just picked whatever the hell they wanted in one TI. Morph was really good, though.
Morph was pretty great. Wings is a different story, man. Those guys can do anything. But, like, Lan-M often breaks the meta. It reminds me of, like, sort of like the Western Puppy in that way, where if there's going to be something weird, like Jungle Juggernaut, there was, like, a couple of TIs where they started playing, like, offlane Venomancer. They're like, yeah, this is the way to go instead of putting this middle support. There was one really interesting strategy at that TI where even though, this is the EHOME one, where even though Ice was playing safe lane, they put him on, I believe it was Timbersaw, and they made him play safe lane Timbersaw, and was like, oh wait, this is actually really, really great. And then they kept playing this until the point where teams have to keep just like, okay, we have to ban, carry Timbersaw. This is the dumbest thing in the world. This is ridiculous. To be fair, Timbersaw was a bit broken that patch. I think DC used that hero to carry themselves to the finals. But overall, it just feels like any tournament, especially at TI where Lan-M is there, not only is he going to play really well, but he's going to do something. The meta will be defined by either him or Puppy in some meaningful capacity. And he's always contributing towards making that happen each and every year, no matter what role he's playing. And he's also played many TIs in many different roles and has looked very, very good at all of them. So for me, that's like, yeah, you definitely deserve to be on the list. And then with MMY, it's just you're good enough. And you had, what, 5 TIs before you retired where you probably there was good arguments for why you should have either at least been able to get to the finals, if not necessarily win. But then I can't necessarily say that this was simply because of your efforts. It's like, yeah, you find yourself in a good situation, good environment. And, you know, there must be some kind of skill to keep consistently finding yourself there. But it's kind of the difference between why, like, both me and Camille can agree to have FY on the list, but not necessarily Fenrir, even though, for the most part, the two of them were together. Then as soon as you see Fenrir and FY move apart, you're like, oh, wait, Fenrir is not really making the things happen anymore. He was in a great situation to allow him to use his talents. Same situation here with Lan-M. No matter where you put this guy, it's going to be amazing. Every single year, every single TI, even if they don't win, it's like, all right, cool. Some interesting thing is happening. So Lan-M definitely, now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, MMY should actually be just striking off the list and I'll just stick with, I don't want to punk out like Camille and choose 2-for-1. I'll just pick the one. I'll pick big dick Lan-M. He's the one.
I can tell you that you're going to win points because you've actually listened to the rule that it says top 5. So Camille's added 6. He can't even add up correctly. He's already behind at this point. Camille?
Down.
You got to win your points back, bro. Why does Ice deserve to be number 4?
Well, we both have Ice at 4.
Yeah,
so I don't
but
know
I'm saying
I'm
you're the one
him.
That now has to argue it because Snare has effectively won the position 5 by saying that he's given me good reasons for Lan-M. Now you get to come out swinging on the Ice at 4th position. Why does he deserve to be 4th?
All right. Well, I feel confident to swing here because Ice for many a year in Dota has been considered the best player, right? Forget even offlane, just best player. He was playing offlane, going to TI and winning the solo mid competition. That's how fucking good this guy
is. So solo mid now defines who's the best player.
No. That's not the... We're talking about just raw technical skill of a player, right? And beyond just the solo mid competition, when he was in his infamous DK roster, the all-star roster, he obviously, again, was considered one of the best offlane players in the world. I believe at that point in time, the best offlane player in the world. And he and the solo mid becomes relevant in the case that where there was matchups where his invoker was so good that they had to swap Mushi, who was then considered the best mid player in the world. Maybe RTZ was a bit better than him, but they played a bit differently. And they used to play Ice 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 mid because he was just that good. But the mid is just an add-on to why Ice 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 is that good. Ice 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 is so good because he can do things that nobody expects to happen in Dota. Obviously, his accolades in the game are insane. But the things that he does when you watch him play, I mean, obviously his accolades, that's the facts, that's what we can back up. But the eye test of Ice 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 is insane. The things he does when he plays is things you never see any other player do. He shapes the game the way he wants to play it. He has his own heroes. He has his own style. He plays heroes. He plays so aggressively sometimes that he draws so much attention. Even if he's feeding 5-0 in lane, Ice 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 is still doing the most impact on the map. I think he's been good in multiple roles as well. Obviously, he's predominantly played offlane. But like I said, in TI6, I believe Ice Ice Ice, other than the Wings players, was the best carry for that event. Obviously, EOM did the great choke against EG and bombed out of the tournament. Prior to that point, Ice Ice Ice, in all the stats for that event, was leading the tournament as carry player. Most last hits, most kills, best KDA. He was just fucking styling that event. And that's a role that you think, wait, when have you seen Ice play carry? I mean, he's played mid, he's played offlane, and then he just comes in and a new role and plays that well. I think just is a testament to how good Ice 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 is as a Dota player, right? So for me, that's why I have Ice 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 as number four. Obviously, I think in the more recent years, I will say that this fourth position is my last of my quote-unquote legacy picks. But in recent years, he hasn't been as great, so I'll add that caveat. Obviously, he's still a top-tier player, but the competition is a lot stiffer now. But I feel like for a number of years in Dota 2 world, he was just way ahead of the competition. He was in a class of his own.
That's a pretty good argument.
Yeah.
Snare, do you have anything to say against Ice 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 in that respect? I mean, you've also got him at fourth.
The only thing that I would say is that as the years have worn on, but this might not necessarily be like a pure critique of Ice, but as the years have worn on, his individual impact in the game, as much, like, he still does a lot, right? And he still makes a lot happen for his team, but he doesn't feel as surprising anymore. Now it feels like, all right, just like an outsized cog in the machine, but still just a cog in the machine. But nah, I largely agree with what he's saying. The one thing that I would add when it comes to Ice is that Ice is also, with the exception of two TIs, TI
I agree with what you're gonna
seven,
say.
Where he wasn't at, and I think, was it TI3, I think, where they came 9th, 12th? Yeah. But like before, let's say before TI7, and all the previous TIs before that, except for 2013 to TI3, Ice 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 should and could have actually won TI. Why didn't somebody just stay in the trees, man? I don't know how they fucked that up. What did Net do? But they actually did, like, Ice Ice Ice, I might have been able to argue that he might actually be higher and maybe swap him around with Burning, but at the end of the day, I think one the only reason why I have him a bit lower here is because people sort of, you start to understand Ice Ice Ice. You're like, all right, we know to just focus Ice and we're going to find a way to get through this. He's going to be incredible. He's going to do amazing. But sometimes it can be, there are some teams where it's a sort of double-edged sword, where if Ice 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 is doing badly in some of his teams, the team will lose. And for me, that's not, I mean, it's a good thing that you're that good, that the enemy team has to focus that much on you. But it doesn't necessarily bode well when you are the linchpin. It's like, if you don't do well, that's it. We're pretty much donezo here. But
you live
way,
by the ice, 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 you die by the
you
ice.
Die by ice, the ice. Ice, yeah. That's the only issue. Where it's like, yeah, it's sometimes it's too much. It's like, all right, we have to put all our eggs in the ice basket. Otherwise, it's not going to work out. No matter if he's playing mid, off lane, or safe lane. So that's the only reason I push him a bit down. But other than that, what Camille said is basically unimpeachable. I'm down with it.
All right.
I have one more caveat to add to sure. Ice, ice, ice. And to respond, sorry to cut you off there, and to respond to Snare's claim that he could reason putting Ice Ice up higher. And that's, For me, why I lock him at four, no higher, is that for me, Ice is a serial fucking choker. So what Sneer says are the technical aspects of the game where you get to stages in the tournament where Ice gets figured out and then it seems like his team doesn't know what to do. That is true. But if you are this sort of star player who wants to be winning events, you need to be showing up for these games. And I feel like whenever Ice and Arteezy have the same problems, these guys are the best in the world right up until it matters, and then they go cold. Then they know where to be found. There's players, you put them in a position where it's do or die. You have to make the final shot of the game. You have to make that big play with the black hole or something, and they excel. And Ice, when it matters, is not one of those players. When it comes to TI semi-final, when it comes to knockout game at TI, Ice is not the guy I'm picking on my team.
All right. I mean, would you pick maybe? Because both you guys have him at number three.
All right.
Simple yes or no. Simple yes or no. Would you guys pick maybe in that position? Because maybe he's also been historically, I mean, he's clearly one of, if not the best mid laner from China for the last 5-6 years at least.
Yeah.
So why do you guys have him at three and not higher then?
So I'll say yes to your question, but I'll let Snake go first. Yeah.
My issue with maybe at the end of the day and why he's third, you know, he's still a god. He's my boy. I love maybe, right? But maybe it seems to be one of those players that he doesn't have the same issue in the sense that he's going to choke. Right? I don't think maybe he's as much of a choker. He tends to perform very stably and very consistently, barring a few like X-factor situations. But I think the main issue that I have with maybe is of all the really, 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 really high-level mid players that exist in the world, I think maybe he's the one that is most susceptible to being outdrafted, which does mean that there's a lot of emphasis that you have.
Does that line maybe, though?
I mean, in a way, I think it does, because not necessarily that he has a shallow hero pool, but then sometimes the matchups he finds himself in, he doesn't perform as well as he might be from like a... Because like, there's players, say, like Sumail or whatever, right? Who, yeah. Even in a losing matchup, even if you have a losing hero matchup, you know that this guy is probably going to beat you in the mid lane. And with maybe it feels like you have to sort of set this guy up for success, for maximal success, rather. He still performs very well and performs above average in almost every situation. But it just feels like there's such a delta between when maybe he's playing incredibly, like at max level, and when he's just playing, okay, this is kind of a difficult situation, difficult game. Like in a game where he's not prioritized in the draft, he feels like, let's say, just a top 5 mid laner, right? Which is still incredible. Right. But then when given the correct matchups and given the correct situation, given the best possible setup he could get, he seemed like head and shoulders, at least in the mid lane, above so like everybody else. The entire field is basically nothing to this guy. So
then why does he keep, you know, making it either to finals or very deep in tournaments and just somehow not winning as many as he should?
I think primarily is that, like, a good showcase for that is these last two TIs. Whenever they lost, right, it was always in the last game, and they would lose particularly around the pick that they did for maybe. It's like, all right, that's actually not going to win us the game, either because he's not going to be able to play at the same pace that the rest of the team needs to, or it's going to be a situation where he's just not going to be in sync with what the rest of the team needs to do in the game. It kind of feels like if maybe gets to a game three, like whenever they get to the end of a series, that's when the team looks most vulnerable. The team that has maybe on it looks the most vulnerable, because at that point, it's similar to Iceness in the sense where you sort of figure out exactly what you want to do against this guy. And he doesn't always adapt in the fastest ways, even though he'll play very well. He still plays in a sort of, he plays stably, stays stably very, very high level, but it's also possible to undercut and underwrite what he's trying to do. If you can find the chinks in the armor, he is a bit more exploitable. And the chinks in the armor show, to be fair, only show up way later. It takes people a long time to figure out where those chinks are. But once the chinks are figured out, it's like, okay, this man is actually exploitable. So there's sometimes where there'll be games where it's like, look, the enemy team will look and they'll be like, okay, we can't win this game now. So all we need to do is play long enough to frustrate maybe. And if we can frustrate maybe and not allow him to play at maximum level, then maybe we still have a chance. We can make this happen. If we don't do that, we're definitely going to lose. Then if we do that, eventually we're going to find some way to exploit him, put him, instead of it being a number one mid laner, he's going to play at the level of number five or number six. And then we have a shot. Then we can win. Because generally when you get to that stage of the tournament, the other mid lane players are at a high enough level as well. They're also top five players. So they don't need to completely shut down maybe. You just need to make sure that you don't give him the opportunity to be the position zero player in the entire game. So that's how it always feels like. if you beat any team that has maybe on it since he's joined LGD, then for the most part, it's either you beat them 2-1 or 2-0, sorry, or you're gonna beat them 2-1, 3-2. If you can beat them once, you have a really good shot of beating them again, which presents a problem, I think, if you are supposed to be this high quality premier mid laner who never cracks and never chokes, and you never do, but then, you know, you don't have the same amount of efficacy as you would have otherwise.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Camille, what do you have to say against that? Do you think that they dismissed anything there, or do you hold the same line? Because you've also, like I said, both of you have him at number three when, I mean, he's been such a great mid laner. Why do you think maybe isn't higher on this list? Why does he deserve it less than Zai or FY, a longtime teammate of his?
So, for me, you guys pointed out a number of issues that happened within maybe teams. I think Snarepots are a good point where LGD are looking, they're kind of like a better version of EG in the sense that when they're looking hot, they're looking straight up unbeatable and nobody can touch them. But once you push them right till the end, make them play that extra time or something, and then they're feeling like, oh shit, maybe can crack now. Maybe they don't do too well with the pressure of a game 3 in a grand finals or game 5 in a grand finals rather, right? But my explanation for that is completely different to SNES. I believe that Chinese Dota and Dota as a whole has an issue with sort of leadership in the sense that we don't have strong coaches in the game where it's the coach's decision. In League of Legends, if this guy plays shit in game number 1, he's going to get fucking subbed. He doesn't have a say in what's going on. There's other people to be accountable. There's other people who have to be in charge of the strategy and what's going on. And I feel like China scene lacks that. And we saw that in TI9 now, where in game 3, in a knockout game to make it to the grand finals, we see maybe playing SF. Now, obviously, maybe he's a good SF player. But at the end of the day, that's SF's not a hero at this point in the meta. Why are we picking SF now? You were about to 2-0. You didn't 2-0, unfortunately. And now you're in a game 3 and you're resorting to this shit. So I think that's a problem in the Chinese Dota scene in general, or in Dota as a whole, that there's nobody really there to make the hard decisions. That's why I think a guy like Sheppy is so valuable, is because he has that sort of leadership going forward, where I think that QQQ, as good as he was as a coach, lacked that to a certain extent. But maybe for me, why I think he deserves to be at 3 is because maybe he's not getting on this list because of some legacy. He was once this, he was once that. He did these great things here. This man is a fucking god. When he is playing, he can do anything and everything. In the mid lane, I mean, has been very competitive recently. We've had the likes of No One, the likes of Sumail. There's been always that talk about who's the best mid laner. And for me, it was maybe hands down, especially at TI. This man shows up and he does what he needs to do. Obviously, LGD traditionally played with a greedy carry player in the form of Armei, who just likes to farm for 20 minutes and then come out and do things. And they could do that, play that sort of traditional style of 4 protect 1 Dota, because you can give maybe any, you give him one of his heroes in any game and he's going to destroy the enemy mid player. And I don't agree with what Snare says, that, oh yeah, but you put him in a top 5 matchup and then it becomes difficult and he can't pop off. That's bullshit. He's played against Sumail, who many consider the best mid player in quote-unquote, when other people play the matchups, the losing matchups, and he dicked him. He gets solo kills on Sumail, the quote-unquote best laner. And for me, the laning stage is only part of why maybe he's so good, because unlike a lot of the other mid players who pop off in the laning stage, the Sumails, the Abeds, I feel like the mid game that maybe plays is even more insane, because he doesn't have the RTZ problem. He doesn't have those choking issues, or he's going to get thrown on a cliff or something dumb as shit like that. He fucking pops off and he keeps the momentum from minute 1 till minute end. And that's why I think for me, maybe he's number 3 at this list. I think he is an exceptionally good mid player, and he has been for a number of years.
All right, fair arguments all around there. I mean, we've got, I think, with maybe, he does seem to be more reliant on his teams than perhaps some of these other players that we've got in the next couple of circumstances. Despite being a very, very good player, he does, I think it's just the nature of the position. Wouldn't you guys agree? That, yes. Like, sometimes that mid laners are more reliant on their team than the next group that we've got going here.
And the next group, I mean, he's the prince of Dota. He's the prince of Chinese Dota. He's just about every single support player's, you know, biggest dream. It's FY. Now, we don't quite have him at we don't quite have him at the exact same spot yet. Snare's got him only at second behind Burning. And Camille's got him at number one. So Camille, why does he deserve to be your number one, and why do you think Snare's put him at number two?
So I can wholeheartedly justify my number one position of FY. Think about the conversation we've been having so far, Snare and Prof. It is always a case of this guy is great, but there's always a but. But with FY, there is zero buts. The level of performance FY has is to extent of him being 10-0 in a game of Clockwork in TI8, and he misses one Cogs, and it's like, you know what? If I actually didn't miss that Cogs, then maybe that was the game losing Cogs. That's how high level this guy performs. Game in, game out, he's consistently top tier. In China, hands down the best pass four they've ever seen and has been for a very long time. He is the best pass four in China, and he's the only pass four in China in modern Dota that can be comparable with the Western pass fours to the Yapzos, to the Crits. I think he's the only one in China.
Whoa! I need to stop you. Hold up. So you're telling me right now, right, that you don't think like you don't think, for example, Fade or DY?
No. Okay, DY at the moment you're coming off. Okay, all right. You're right. But at TI. Did Fade, when he was there at VG Gaming, look like one of the best pass fours in the tournament? Or did he choke?
Now, we agree that particular TI was because China was choking as a whole, right. as a group, right?
Yes, that's fair. Okay, yeah. All right.
And they still got top three at TI. Like,
yes. You're not wrong there. You're not wrong.
But I mean, you guys were talking about chokers earlier. Wouldn't you say that, like, FY and his teams are chokers? Because what, FY's been in the finals of three TIs and he's not won any of them.
Dude, yeah.
Listen, I get where you're coming from, Prof. I get where you're coming from. He's been in final of two TIs and he's never won one, right? But in those games, you can never look at FY individually and fault him. Throughout the tournament, he plays at such a consistent high level. And it's not just on this LGD team. He played for Vici Gaming with Ice as well. Any team FY's been in, he looks like an all-star player. And for me, that's a case of being the best in the world. You don't need circumstance. You don't need this teammate. You don't need that to enable you. Anytime, any place, and FY shows up. I mean, there's been finals where he's played against EG, and in the game threes or game fives, he's getting clutch E-Blades or Hexes on Arteezy's Lycan, and he wins his team the game by himself as a support. I mean, you don't see that too often in professional Dota, especially in the latent portions, but FY does it. He does it so often. He makes it look normal. Like I said, his game, he's playing Clockwork, he's 10-0, and it's like, if he got one more thing, his team could have won. I mean, how much better do you have to play than FY? That's for me, he is the best player to have never won a TI, because at TI, he's one of the few players that consistently shows up from start to end.
Strong argument. Snare, why does he not deserve top spot?
I actually might be being swayed by this argument, because it's actually making a lot of sense. But for me, honestly, I will definitely say that this is only partial analysis. Part of it is also my emotional feeling. I think FY as well has... I think it's easier. Maybe that's the wrong word. When you're playing pass four at a big tournament like TI, generally what tends to happen is that as a team, thinking about how to beat another team, you think through, okay, what do we have to do with their mid player? How do we handle their core? How do we make sure that the laning phase goes well for us? You're not always keeping your eye on the ball and thinking specifically about, okay, what's the pass four doing, right? Every now and then you do get these guys. You get like your Yapzos or your GHs where it's like, okay, you really can't ignore this guy if you expect to be able to win this game. And I feel like, I wouldn't say directly, but it feels like sometimes FY, weirdly enough, flies under the radar. Like, you'll be aware of the fact that he's doing amazing things, but it's not all the time do enemy teams try to directly address FY. And then whenever it comes to the case where they do try to directly address FY, they generally tend to beat the team that FY is on. For me, one of the best examples is the first TI that they were at. I think he was at, excuse me. I think it was 2014. Yeah, TI4, where they came second with VG Gaming. And in that TI, literally in the grand finals, throughout the entire tournament, I think generally in the draft, they might ban one at tops two pass four heroes that FY could play. And in the finals, Shawit looked and he's like, wait a second. You know what? I'm going to ban three FY heroes all of our games. And the one game that they didn't, they only banned two, is the game that Vici won. But the game that they were able to ban FY Heroes, suddenly it's Newbie that wins. And this particular trend, I think, always plays out whenever I see teams being able to get an upper hand off of teams that FY is on. When that team is like having a very powerful run throughout a tournament, at the moment they turn their gaze towards this guy, address him, not that it all falls apart, but it's kind of similar to the maybe situation where what this guy is able to bring to the table suddenly decreases in a marked way. And he still plays amazingly, like, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. I kind of feel like there are these players who also, you don't have necessarily the same amount of confidence in this guy in game one as you do in game five, right? He's going to still be hot. He's still going to do amazing things for you. Don't get me wrong. But he does also feel like he needs to win quickly is maybe the wrong word. But you get what I mean, right? Like, the set of games needs to conclude in as fast a manner as humanly possible. Things must go relatively according to plan. If they don't, FY is able to bail you out of it. But there's a limited amount of bailouts that FY is able to give you. And once the enemy team start directly addressing FY and looking at nothing else and just be like, deal with this guy, right? And then it doesn't feel like he's able to do as many bailouts as he might be able to do in other contexts.
Does that not speak more to his effectiveness, that they actually have to start dealing with him? Whereas other players, you can just sort of play around them and they become less effective. Where, I mean, the way you're putting it sounds like FY actually has to be dealt with actively rather than just ignored in a passive style.
No, you're definitely right about that. Yeah, he does. It does actually speak to his impact, his abilities in the game, because it does mean that you are required to beat him requires beating him, or beat his teams requires beating him specifically. And like I said, when Kamio was talking, it was actually very persuasive, this argument, and I might have actually been swayed to put FY as number one. Also, not something else about FY, which actually just counteracts my point now, but I'm just thinking about the fact that at the five TIs he's been in, only TI... forget which one. I think it was six, maybe. Which one was he on? Vici Reborn. I think so, that was six. Yeah.
TI 4 second. Wait, let me just whip out the whole list. Yeah.
But so it definitely has to be TI. It has to be TI 6. Yeah, yeah. Because that's the one where Wings won. Yeah, definitely TI 6. So in that year, they fumble. It is what it is. It sucks. But he's never placed less than fourth at a TI, which is kind of incredible. Kind of really wow. It's like outlandish to think about that kind of record at the, you know, biggest tournament in the world. The only reason personally why I have him as second and Burning as first. Well, there's two reasons. Firstly,
I'll tell you the reason.
You can't have the prince before the king.
You're like, oh, I used to watch Burning when I was a kid. He's so good.
All I'm going to say is this. Like, Snare didn't even get Burning's moniker correct because he called him the king when he's not the king. He's the emperor.
Ooh, get fucked.
The god emperor. My bad. I fucked up on that one. I messed up.
Oh, Snare's losing points, yeah. Snare's losing points big time. Yeah. I mean, so Camille... We already know Snare's now full list. He goes Lanham, Ice, maybe FY, Burning. But you've got Zai.
Yeah. Wait, I want to hear him justify Burning at once, though. Because we spoke about Burning on my side. But on his side, I want to see why he says number one Burning.
Yeah, I mean...
because for years, right, if you were playing carry, if you're playing Dota 2 and you're playing carry, right, you're playing Burning's Dota. When Arteezy started getting good at Dota, the reason he was getting better at Dota is, like, the closer you approach playing Dota... like, after he left the mid lane, mind you. He started playing how? Like, Burning. And that's what you need to do. That one particular year where he was on Team Secret, where they were dominating everything. The year with him, Kuro, Zai, Puppy. Right. Only other team in the entire year, right, that was able to actually compete in some meaningful capacity with Team Secret, right? It was either EG or IG, right? And the IG at that time, this was when Burning went back to carry after he tried to coach for a while. And... honestly, that team was good. That IG team was good, right? But the solitary addition of Burning took them from good to competing with Team Secret, who I still think, if compared to how far ahead they were from themselves to everybody else, I don't think we've seen a team that dominant since ever.
Okay, so just this one question, though. Like, how many times has Burning ever gone into TI as like a legitimate favorite, though? Outside of TI4, how many times has he legitimately been a favorite?
I think the only one is maybe, actually might be four, maybe two. Who was he playing on a two?
He was still on DK. Yeah, he was still on DK until the end of four and then he left.
Yeah, but that DK wasn't nearly as strong as the next one.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, definitely hasn't come into tournaments. Like LETI is like, yo, okay, look out for the Burning team. Like generally, I think the one major knock against Burning is that very often Burning's 4-protect-1 style, that would literally define the team, where even the team sort of exists as a vehicle to see how far we can take Burning in the game. It wasn't about, okay, what can we do as a cohesive unit? It's what do we need to do to allow Burning to win? And if it goes well, Burning will win the game for us. You know, as long as he's not dying 10 times, he's probably going to win the game for us, and it's going to go well for us at the end of the day. I will definitely grant that he hasn't found himself too often on stellar teams. But at the same time, if you have Burning on your team, do you need a stellar team? Like, XXX might not be the best offlaner in the world or whatever, but do you need any... If Burning's there, it's really fine. TI4, the one tournament where they did come in as the favorites, they choked at the end of the day. Also, there was like those leech strats, which I think had a huge impact on how the team itself performed. But even in the games where things... Because also, Mushi shat the bed at TI4, I think. That didn't go well for him. And Burning had to basically play two roles. It's like, all right, Mushi's going to both lose mid lane and make some dumbass decisions in the mid game that make no goddamn sense. So Ice is just going to do Ice things. The only way that this game stays on anything resembling a meaningful strategic track is if I do the thing. I'm just going to... I'm gonna be out here. I'm going to be Burning. Also, I just feel like it hurts a lot. He was the first carry player I ever saw in a Dota tournament. It was that classic IG DK game, the 90-something minute one.
The best of seven.
I looked and I was like, this guy's amazing. This guy's incredible. And he is also one of the few carry players who he's not volatile at all. He's either amazing or he's shit. There's literally no in between.
That is volatility, though.
No, but like, if he's shit, he's going to be shit for a minute. It's not going to be like, okay, this one game is going to be amazing, the next game is going to be shit.
That's still like a level of volatility, though. Like, if he's bad, you want him to be consistently bad for like long, long, long periods of time.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, if he's bad, he'll be bad for months. He'll be bad for like 2, 3, 4 months. He's not going to be amazing. But
the problem is, at that point, like, is he worth picking up? So, like, I mean, how much of this is related to Burning... like rose tinted glasses, yeah.
Snare. Oh, most of it. Maybe like 85% of it. No. Yeah, no, this number one pick, right? This is definitely just my heart crying out whenever I see Burning's face. It's basically like if we had this conversation in 3-4 years, right? Now that SCCC's moved to carry, I'll probably say the same thing. We're like, I hate seeing this guy where his team's shitting the bed. They've called GG and he hasn't even realized the game is over because he's still in it trying to make moves happen across the map. Just hating life and being like, well, sorry guys, I'm sorry to disappointed you guys again. You know, I tried, but I flopped again. Oh no, rose-tinted glasses. This is not even rose-tinted glasses, this is a rose-tinted fucking contacts, man. This is me now. Just being like burning number one, China number one. There's no meaningful reason. If honestly, off the basis of just rational argumentation, Burning would probably be number 5 and FY would be number 1. But hey man, you know, there's something special about watching an anti-mage go into the jungle, you know? Like, you know, sometimes, like, hyper-farming, the reason I like watching Chinese hyper-farming is literally because of Burning. Just be like, I want to see how he can do it, how he can go from camp to camp in a minute, clear out the whole jungle, while still pushing outside lanes at the same time, you know, getting, like, 1,000 GPMs on anti-mage. Yes, this is what I'm down for. That's what I'm here for. So, no, completely, rationally, nah, he doesn't deserve number one, but... in my heart.
All right, let me tell you what Burning's. Now, number one in that team DK Burning jacket, greatest esports jacket of all time. Number one position
agreed,
Burning.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
But that's about fucking it, mate.
Oh my god, bro. Oh my god. Bro, you have Zhai on your list and you're going to give me shit about Burning, bro.
All right. So, Prof, I'm going to take it away since my man's near.
I was just going to say, like, I mean, it sounds like we've got some heat here. Why you got Zai, Camille? Why do you got Zai and why is Snare wrong about Zai?
So, Zai is on the list, but no, he is, by and large, the best player on this list. Like, if we're talking about players in terms of this is how good this guy is at Dota 2, Zai is the best on this list. And I feel like that I didn't. That's,
I mean, this
how
is from
the,
this
list
is from the man that said that Ice has been the best for multiple years.
Yes. So basically, what Ice was, right, was this guy. That's a good comparison to start off with, bro. Ice was this guy who you could just give him something, he could like legendarily pop off and just like win the game by himself, beat a tri lane, he could do all this shit, right? But there was other games with Ice 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 where you give him something and it's like, Ice, just go farm jungle for, but get an Iron Talon or some shit. And he just fucking shit the bed, right? But Zai is the opposite of that. Zai has been the best player in the world in multiple roles for a number of years. In his time at EG, he was the best pos 4. No, not later on, because that team was a bit shit and he wasn't there for too long. But there was multiple times, or in his original stint with EG, he was the god of pos 4. I don't think anybody's ever farmed more on a pos 4 in their lives other than maybe AUI 2000 in his prime as well. So for me, he was a god tier 4 position player. Then he moved to offlane, where he's been not best in the world in offlane once, but twice. That TI5 EGT secret team, Zai was the best offlaner for that year by far. Like, teams were banning his broodmother because he was just like that insane on it. He was just like that entire team secret roster was ahead of the curve for that entire year. Zai was even more ahead. He was just a god. Now if we look at this year, when Zai is playing offlane once again, and last year as well, with Zai playing pos 3, Zai is a pos 3 who can play literally everything. Zai is a pos 3 who can play when he is pos 4, is Yapzor, or being the greediest fucking player, more greedy than burning anti-mage, and Zai can still make it work. I've seen Zai play offlane Lion, offlane Leshrac, offlane you name it, and he'll go to the lane, he won't die, he'll play properly, he'll have impact in the game, and he's just that fucking good at Dota. He's not a choker. He is Zai. Person who's been best in the world in his position 3 times, bro. 3 separate occasions. I can't say that for anybody else in the fucking world.
But the thing is, that doesn't necessarily apply. We're talking about TI, right? And outside of, say, I'll give you TI4 and I'll give you TI9, actually. Yeah, I'll give you both 4 and 9 to say, yes, the reasons for the successes of both teams have large measure to do with Zai, right? Especially 4. But 4 and 9, yeah. Hands down, Zai is out here making the most happen. TI9 also has a good argument because I don't think Midone had a shit tournament at TI9. And Zai had to put in a hell of a lot of work to try and make this team seem something reasonable. Obviously, Nisha's just doing his thing, but yes, it's just Nisha.
I mean,
whatever.
They were playing that tournament 4v5 or 4v6 because Midone was such a dog. So yeah, the whole team really pulled themselves up and played well. But Zai, again, here you're agreeing with me.
I'm agreeing there, right? But in the TIs before, in between that, right? So say TI5, TI6, like TI5, like fine, they were banning a lot of his, like they were banning some of his offlane heroes there, right? But the heroes that they did end up picking up for him on the side of Team Secret, or rather the reasons why Secret was winning, I think had a lot more to do with, in particular, right? In that particular TI, the games that they were actually doing okay, had a lot to do with S4 and Kuroki, right? Doing a lot of things either around the map or just strategically behind the scenes to allow for victory to happen from Team Secret. I didn't really feel the impact of Zai outside of like a couple of games in the group stages. But like once they got to the main event, it felt like Zai didn't really... I can't remember anything that this guy did.
Well, their main event was very short at TI5, if we remember them getting knocked out by Illidan's VP at like 8th place or some shit.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we didn't get to see too much of Team Secret at TI5.
But like, okay, so fine, that's 5, right? At TI6, he was on the EG team with...
Garbage. Oh, that was a place 3 team. Okay, that team wasn't too bad,
place 3, the one with Fear and Sumail, right?
Yeah.
But the reason that they were able to do so well, right, is that, honestly, let's be serious, right? A lot of games were cheesed out by EG. Something weird would happen, they cheese it out. Like, even the way that they got into the top 3, right? In a losing game, where if they lost that game, they probably would have lost, been 2-0 anyway. You know, PPD pulls out an all Dagon strat. You're like, all right, guys, let's go ahead and do this. Let's make this magic happen, right? While Sumail, I think Sumail was playing Morana that game. Yeah. It was Sumail, Morana. Everyone's Dagoning everybody. It's like, all right, fine. You pull out this victory here. But then the moment that they lost, they lose to Wings, drop down loser bracket. And where was Zai? Like, in the loser bracket, in those games that they were playing against DC. Zai was getting his dick stomped on by Saxa and Misery. Imagine being out-rotated by fucking Saxa back then. Now Saxa fine. It is what it is.
I mean, losing to VP at TI should be like a career end.
Illidan VP, boy.
Before Ramses, bro. Like, if you said like Ramses or some shit, I'd be like, aye, you know what? I get it. I understand, right? I see where you're coming from here. But like Zai, it feels like actually Zai, the issue that I have with the Zai pick is that Zai is always, outside of TIs 3 and 9, right? Zai is always way better, way, way better when he's not at TI. He feels like he's VP when he gets to TI. It's like, oh, he's going to be here, not going to play terribly because he's not capable of playing badly. He's an incredible player. I'll definitely agree with you that, like, in terms of just overall raw skills, he's, yeah, I agree that the only player who can say is maybe in that tier level of being good is maybe if the stars align, but just overall, right. Zai is the best player here. But he doesn't feel anything approaching the best player once they actually get to TI. At TI itself, it always feels like the guy is playing at a subpar level, at least outside of the first and the latest one. Yeah, outside of 4 and 9. Every other time, he's just there. Like, you could easily, in most of the teams he's in, you could have slotted in any other pause 4 player who plays at a relatively high level, and there'd be no meaningful difference between how his teams performed with or without him. Whereas you couldn't say the same outside of the TI. You'd be like, yo, this guy's an integral reason why you guys are winning games. But at the TI itself, it's like, meh, really, whatever. Like, you could have him, could not have him. Would it really make, like, at TI 6, would it make that much of a difference if this was Yapzo playing instead of Zai in that tournament? Probably not. It would be the same shit. Just be like, all right, cool, bro. You're doing your thing. But it doesn't feel to me like he's done enough at TI, right, to be like, yo, he deserves to be, of all the players that have ever played TI that you can imagine, the number one guy who's actually not been able to win, and you feel like this is actually a robbery, this is actually kind of fucked up. Because it's just, it doesn't feel like he plays that, like, even fucking Super, right, DK playing Razor every other game, Super, I think has a better claim towards saying he deserves to have won TI over Zai in this situation.
Look, Super has had a number of good performances at TI, right? And my list was comprised mostly around the TI performances, their legacy coming in and such. But Zai will remain at number 2 for the same reasons I stated. He's finished. He's had 2 TIs where he's contenders for best in what he's done. I think Paz 4 at TI 4, we can both agree, was absolutely phenomenal there.
Yeah,
maybe best
agree.
Of the event. Yeah. So getting an MVP in his role there would have been a foreseeable thing, and the could have been great. And then again at TI9, obviously Secret was a bit shit. Well, sorry, mid one was garbage and cost them that entire event. But again, Zai stepped up and played very well, right? So in two TIs, he has his cases for being one of the best players at the event. And again, I don't think I've seen another player been the best player in the world in his role 3 separate occasions. So for me, I think Zai stays on the list because he's one of the few people in the world when you're building a Dota 2 team, I'm like, okay, here's Zai, build a team around him. And it's like, okay, I can do that. I mean, obviously, this list would have been a bit different if it was just going off, like, people who I think are really good, because then I could have put No One and Ramses on the list and been like, listen, yeah, these guys were the best in their world in their capacity for 2 straight years. They could have been, they should have won TIs, right? And we can agree there. But obviously, I built the list a bit differently. But Zai, for me, having great TI performances and being the best is a combination enough to keep his number 2 spot.
It's a pretty good argument. Very, very good argument, in fact.
Thank you, Mr. Prophecy.
I must say, Snare, you've actually disappointed me massively tonight.
Oh, my
because
God.
Because, firstly, I give you the first point because Camille clearly doesn't know how to listen to the rules. Like, you can't have 6 players in a top 5.
All right.
It's not how the world works.
Fair enough.
Right? I mean, at the end of the day, like, the ISIS argument is fair. I think ISIS is probably, given that I've not really watched a lot of Dota in the last, say, 2 or 3 years, ISIS, when I have watched him, has always seemed like he's better than average, but I think he flatters to deceive very often in the last few years, in that he's still a big name, but he rarely seems to have the impact that his name would suggest.
Yeah, unless he's playing Pangolier, then that's
a
different
story. But, I mean, like, in general, I think that is a problem with ISIS, is that, like, his reputation is as an all-time player, he is almost certainly going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But he's one of those where, like, he might not be, everybody's... Actually,
so you're trying to say, sorry, you're trying to say he's the burning of offlane?
No. I think ISIS... Given that ISIS is so well loved, I think it makes people a little bit more likely to forgive his faults when he does actually have a number of faults.
Oh, so fair. Yeah.
That is fair.
He does overreach at many, many times, and I do think that in general, like I mean, you guys did say it, like you live by the ISIS, you die by the ISIS. Like, there are games where he'll throw it away just because of how he plays, and you just have to learn to live with that. Regarding maybe, I think maybe is an extremely, how can I put this? Like, he's an elite player, but he doesn't seem to, like, he doesn't quite light the fires when I watch him. Like, oh, you know, like, light the fires of your soul. Like, he is extremely efficient. He's like, if you could build a machine to play Dota, he would be the ultimate machine. Everything he does well, but, like, he doesn't have that,
X-factor, are you trying to say?
Not necessarily X-factor. It's just, like, there's something that he's missing when it comes to like Arteezy. Like Arteezy will have like his own little ticks and all the rest, whereas maybe sometimes lacks that kind of thing. Like he's always great at what he does, but he I think he lacks that last step to make him legendary in uniqueness amongst players. And I think that's that is probably like what is going to be his downfall. I'm just going to come right out and say it. Like, I agree. I think FY is probably the most deserving of a TI, of players that it's made it that has made it to TI, because three times he's made the finals, three times he's been absolutely monstrous as a support. And at the end of the day, a support, while he can certainly decide games early at the very elite end of competition, it comes down to the fact that like you need a better team, and I just don't think FY has been given has had teams that can deal with the pressure cooker environment, whereas FY himself has never seemed to
guy doesn't crack
the guy doesn't crack under pressure. He plays magnificently well. It just happens to be that like he can't affect the game to that same degree. I think Snare, personally, you're a little bit harsh on Zai. I think Zai has been an absolute god at TI on numerous teams. He just hasn't, similar to FY, he doesn't tend to play the positions that can completely take over the game. And I think at the end of the day, Zai is probably the best Westerner to never win a TI as yet. I think Arteezy is mad overrated because
for sure
he is like he's America's baby, and that's the problem. Like every American wants him to win, so he gets hugely overrated. Like, I do think Arteezy deserves to be on the list in the top five. But I think Zai is more consistently a better player at TI than Arteezy has been.
I feel like Zai is as good as the Arteezy fanboys think Arteezy is, basically.
No, I think he's better, dude.
The problem is, I think Arteezy, when he gets into those like those supremely difficult stages that later on in TI represents, Arteezy becomes he plays too much for himself and not for the team. And at the end of the day, that is going to cost your team when he holds such an important role. They've never seemed to figure out how to make Arteezy and Sumail work in a team, despite them both being the golden children of NA. And I think that comes down to like they both just can't exist on the same team. They both need so much space that I think that you can only have one or the other. And yes, Sumail is certainly, I think, more volatile in that he can have an absolutely horrendous early game, but he's got the mindset to keep going and pull things out, whereas Arteezy defaults to the burning play style of I must get mine.
I'll allow that. The one thing, when it comes to the Zai thing, right, I'll definitely allow that. Part of the reason, actually, I think I'm being so hard on this guy, on Zai, versus how I'm considering everybody else here on this particular list, is that Zai is always, when Zai is, it's kind of similar to maybe in the respect that, like, when he feels really good, he's just a god. And now I want you to be a god all the time, like, quietly, unassuming. Make sure that your mid lane is failing, why aren't you there, bro? What's up with you?
Yeah.
Like, maybe I just expect too much from Zai at the end of the day. And it's just like, no, well, if he's incredible, he must play at a level higher than everybody else. Otherwise, I just sort of forget about him. I still do think that, like, he's had god performances at TIs. I still do think that, like, the level that he's played at TI is still overall much lower than the level he's capable of, as we usually see throughout the year. And for me, with the list that I have here, with the exception of maybe, most of these players are relatively the same by the time they get to TI as throughout the rest of the year, right? ISIS doesn't change throughout the year. FY doesn't change. Lanem, well, I don't really play anymore, but he never really used to change. And Burning, you know, if he's garbage, he's going to be garbage, but he's going to be garbage before the tournament and at the tournament. He's amazing before the tournament, he's going to be amazing at the tournament. And for me, Zai is just, I just don't know which, I don't know if I'm going to get, Zai is like VP for me, where I don't know if I'm going to get the VP that I just, that is actually that good at TI, or if I'm going to get TI VP, where you're just like, oh, you guys, yikes, aight, guys, whatever.
Well, I mean, look, fair points all around. I do think, Snare, your arguments sometimes fell by the wayside. I do actually like your team more, I'm not going to lie. You've got Burning, who's my favorite carry, Lanham, who's my favorite support. I do have a huge amount of respect for FY. Maybe he's not really my style, and I used to like Ice, but I think I've found a couple other guys. But still, I mean, I like your team more, your five-man lineup more, but Camille wins this one, even though he doesn't know how to count. And that's really what we've learned here tonight, guys. So Camille doesn't know how to count to five. And his dad and his mom are going to have to take him out back and smack him with a fish until he learns how to count to five properly and doesn't add an extra digit and an extra name into a five-man list.
Listen, I put them as five together because they're equally bad at TI. They're both half a player at TI, so together, one player. But
now you're trying you're trying to lawyer away your way out of this. It doesn't work like that.
Bro, just take the W.
Taking the W. The fish I'm getting slapped with is a king clip, boy.
That's it.
Is that our podcast, boys? Are we satisfied with me wrecking Snare because he's a loser? That
destroyed,
sucks.
Bro.
It got destroyed.
Wait, hold up. Let's do one more quick one. A fun one, right?
All
right. Top five players who've won TI that probably didn't deserve it.
Top five players that won TI that didn't deserve it. Shib, Note, I'm kidding. that's a hard one, dude. Okay, so let's think. TI1 was the Na'Vi boys, the Russians. Only CISTI, they all deserved it. Fuck it, I'll keep them. IG, those guys are all super good. I don't think anybody who wins TI doesn't deserve it, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't think that's a real thing.
I don't know.
Prof.
There are some players on that. There are some players on that newbie team where you just like, those guys are a bunch of bums.
Should Banana and Sangsheng have won TI? Nah, bro. I love that newbie team, right? But I loved it because I'm like, you know what? We got the boy Zhaoich here, the god himself doing his thing. You have Banana. No, you got Cheng Ji Hao, who was, in my opinion, the best carry at TI3. This guy's here right now doing his thing. Who was playing mid at the time? Mu, doing this really
good.
Who
was really good.
You know, when Mu was good, it was really, really good. Like, yo, this is actually pretty great. And then Sancheng and Banana. You're like, okay.
They worked in that meta, and I mean they were pretty good at TI3. Let's be fair, they were actually, and it was, I mean, newbie was basically just Tong Fu.
Tong Fu minus King J and
plus Xiao Wei. So I mean, good team all around, but like, yeah, I think if you really do a deep dive, you could probably find like a couple of players. But as you guys say, it's hard to find undeserving players, just given, you know, there's no like. It's not like a 15-man roster where you definitely have some bums hanging around on those teams and they're like, I'm better than you because I won. You know, it's like that argument where like the fourth best player on the Bulls in the 90s is like, oh, well, I won more NBA championships than Charles Barkley. This is like, and your point is what?
Oh, wait. Actually, I do have one. I do have another one, right? Do you guys think in the year he won TI, right, would you even put in your top five players in his position in the year he won TI, EGM?
Dude, in that year, he was really good.
Anything
besides that year, he was a dog. But in that year, he was good.
But no, I'm saying at the tournament, do you think he was top five, four positions at the tournament even?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, okay. I think Chuan played better than him, TI3, in my opinion. Obviously I'm gonna say MMY does, but you know, I'm a MMY fanboy. He was on my list earlier. And then who else? There's one other player that's on my mind.
Did you think play better than him?
Nah, dog. Funnik was off lane most, so it doesn't really count the way.
But who was Navi's boss for then?
Puppy and Kuro played support, yeah. And then Extinct Visage, that's who I forgot, from Orange. Yeah. There we go. Those are players that I'm actually putting up above EGM.
No, I think EGM deserved it. But the problem is also that Alliance team is also a very difficult team to judge in the normal respects, right, because their best player was in the offlane position.
Yeah.
And they had a playmaker in pods one, and then they had a playmaker in mid, and then like just a very stable carry in their safe lane. So like that team is built around Bulldog. So whatever anybody says, like it's hard to justify that team being. It's hard to say that
they were the best team. Like they were a team, a cohesive unit and a team. But Sneer, I just thought about this. You don't think EGM or Wisp alone deserve?
Oh, hold on, but come on, that's not fair.
Sneer's too smart for himself. Sneer's too smart. He screwed himself by like opening up a whole world of hurt. Yeah,
god damn it, guys. But it's not fair. Look, Wisp at TI is OP, right? So you can't bring up Wisp at TI. Wisp,
you still got to play it, bro.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
just remember how many other teams played Wisp at that TI that weren't Chinese.
Oh, they were everybody.
Yeah.
The Chinese not playing it, yeah.
Like, it was like Na'Vi and Alliance could use Wisp, and then the rest of them were just like, we're auto-banning this because China has figured out some way to play Wisp that just wrecks everybody.
So let's not do this.
The only last shout-out I like to make in this podcast from my end is I want to shout-out my boy Mushi. Okay, he didn't make the list, but I think if there's one guy I would be really happy to see win a TI one day, it'll be my boy, 100%.
Yeah, Mushi is definitely deserving.
Yeah, actually, Mushi, if this was a list of 10, I would have definitely had Mushi on the list.
100%, 100%. So thank you all for listening in to me destroy Sneer. Left us destroyed, bro. And thank you to Prophecy for hosting this thing. He was a top-tier referee. And thank you all for listening. That was episode number 77.
So excited about winning. Numbers
are hard for Kamil. We've learned this right today.
You know, I take something from my boy Jay-Z, you know? So catch us all on Twitter at KChickday, at _Sneer_, at Prophecy Gaming with the CI instead of the usual spelling, and of course the publication at esportscentral.za, at Facebook, on Facebook rather, on Twitter at esportscntrl, and of course at the World Wide Web at esportscentral.co.za. Thank you all for listening and goodbye.
Cheers.
OG winning twice was a fluke.